Welcome to Transformed by Grace, an in-depth Bible study of God's Word presented by the Berean Bible Society. Join us each time on this station as Pastor Kevin brings the transforming message of God's grace revealed through the Holy Scriptures.
Once a newly crowned king who was an animal lover, so much so that he issued an edict that there could be no hunting of any animals or game while he was king. People had mixed feelings, but the king was so good to them that they obeyed the command. That is, until the kingdom became overrun with animals of all types. The people gathered and talked and decided that this could not go on. They pleaded with the king to change his edict, but the king would not change his mind. So in the end, the people chose to overthrow the king. It was the only time in history that the rain was called on account of game, instead of a game being called on account of rain, of course. After the death of Haman, the enemy of the Jews, all the Jews' troubles were not over. The edict calling for the destruction of all the Jews still stood as law over Persia. What you find in Esther 8 are the steps that are taken to counteract the unchangeable edict of Haman and to preserve the Jews. Esther chapter 8 verses 1 and 2 read, "On that day did the king Ahasuerus give the house of Haman, the Jews' enemy, unto Esther the queen. And Mordecai came before the king, for Esther had told what he was unto her. And the king took off his ring, which he had taken from Haman, and gave it unto Mordecai. And Esther set Mordecai over the house of Haman." Here at this point in the book of Esther, by God's working, the tables continue to turn in a favorable direction for Esther, Mordecai, and the Jews. When verse 1 says, "On that day," it refers to the day that Haman was executed on the 75-foot-high gallows that he had built for Mordecai. According to Persian law, the entire estate of condemned criminals and traitors were forfeited and confiscated by the king. And on this very full day, which started very early with the king being unable to sleep, following Haman's death, the king decided to give the house of Haman, the Jews' enemy, unto Esther the queen, giving Haman's entire estate to Esther. And this was no small gift. Haman had boasted to his wife and friends about the glory of his riches, and out of his vast riches and fortune, he was able to offer the king a bribe of 375 tons of silver. The house of Haman included his money, but also his house, his land, his servants, his possessions, everything he owned. The king could have kept this valuable estate for himself, but instead he chose to give it to Esther. And thus, all the riches of this wicked enemy of the Jews was given to a Jew. Esther had revealed to the king on this day that she was a Jew, and now she further revealed her relationship with Mordecai. She shared about their blood relationship, the quality of that relationship, and the character of this good man. Esther explained that her father and mother had died and that her older cousin Mordecai had taken her in as her guardian and treated her as his own daughter. On this same day of Haman's death, verse 1 tells us that Mordecai came before the king. The king had reclaimed his signet ring from Haman before he was taken to the gallows. And upon Mordecai coming before the king took off his ring, which he had taken from Haman, and gave it unto Mordecai. This act promoted Mordecai to the same office Haman had held, and it invested him with the power of the chief officer, the highest office in all of Persia, next to the king. The signet ring gave Mordecai the authority to act in the king's name and the ability to write any document and to put the king's seal on it. The ring was the visible symbol of Mordecai's high honor and office. And ironically, the very ring that had been used by Haman to seal the fate of the Jews after he wrote the decree of their destruction was now bestowed on a Jew. But that ring was in good hands now. What we find here is that Esther received and was rewarded with the riches of Haman, and Mordecai received and was rewarded with the role of Haman. And now there was a Jewish queen and a Jewish second in command over the entire Persian Empire. And that clearly shows the providence of God and his working behind the scene. After Mordecai was promoted to the role of chief officer by the king, Esther the queen then put Mordecai in charge of Haman's estate and riches to oversee it. She desired in his new role, while she lived in the palace, that Mordecai would live in a home that was commensurate with his high office and manage this vast estate at the same time. Irony just fills the book of Esther. You find another instance here because Haman had decreed that the Jews' property should be confiscated when they were killed, but now, following his execution, Haman's property was in the possession of the Jews, Esther and Mordecai. Esther chapter 8, verses 3 to 8 read, "And Esther spake yet again before the king, and fell down at his feet, and besought him with tears to put away the mischief of Haman the Agagite, and his device that he had devised against the Jews. Then the king held out the golden scepter toward Esther. So Esther arose and stood before the king, and said, If it please the king, and if I have found favor in his sight, and the thing seem right before the king, and I be pleasing in his eyes, let it be written to reverse the letters devised by Haman, the son of Hammedatha, the Agagite, which he wrote to destroy the Jews which are in all the king's provinces. For how can I endure to see the evil that shall come unto my people? Or how can I endure to see the destruction of my kindred? Then the king Ahasuerus said unto Esther the queen and to Mordecai the Jew, Behold, I have given Esther the house of Haman, and him have they have hanged upon the gallows, because he laid his hand upon the Jews. Write ye also for the Jews, as it liketh you, in the king's name, and seal it with the king's ring. For the writing which is written in the king's name and sealed with the king's ring, may no man reverse." As we come to verse 3, we come to a later time and occasion, but probably not long after the day of Haman's execution. We see a tender side of Queen Esther in verse 3. We have seen her strength, her dignity, poise, grace, and courage. And now we see her tears. And her tears were for her people. Her chief concern and care were not for the great wealth she had just acquired. She had a greater concern for her people. Warren Wiersbe put it well when he wrote, "We need more people like Esther, whose burden for condemned people was greater than any other thing in life." And all of those outside of Christ around us in life are condemned people and are in danger of eternity in the lake of fire. The Jews were still in danger under the irreversible edict which called for their destruction in the month Adar. The evil countdown continued, and something needed to be done to counter it. And so Esther, of her own accord, appeared before the king a second time, unsummoned, to intercede for her people, doing so without Mordecai challenging her to do it. Although Mordecai, the king's new chief officer, was present, as we see from verse 7 here, Esther came to the king with more confidence and less fear for her life than the first time when she did this in chapter 5, but death was still a possibility for the queen even at this second appearance before the king's throne. the law still stood, that whosoever, whether man or woman, shall come unto the king into the inner court who is not called, there is one law of his to put him to death, except such to whom the king shall hold out the golden scepter, that he may live. Again, Esther needed the king to extend his royal scepter to pardon her and spare her life. This is further evidence of Esther's sincerity when she declared, "If I perish, I perish." In her tears, Esther pleaded with the king to put away the mischief of Haman the Agagite and his device that he had devised against the Jews. The queen implored the king to reverse the edict that Haman had schemed and created to kill all the Jews. Although Haman had been executed, his decree was still executable because Persian law could not be altered or canceled. In verse 4, we see that the king extended his golden scepter to Esther for the second time in the record, a gesture which pardoned and spared her life, further showed his approval and acceptance, and encouraged her that he was listening and for her to continue presenting her plea. So Esther stood up to continue with this urgent petition. And Esther's specific request was, "Let it be written to reverse the letters devised by Haman, the son of Hammedatha, the Agagite, which he wrote to destroy the Jews which are in all the king's provinces." Esther wanted a second edict that would override or revoke the first edict, which ordered the annihilation of all Jews in all the provinces. In this verse, we see Esther being wise and careful not to implicate the king in his part and for his responsibility with the decree, but instead she gave Haman all the blame for it. Again, showing her selfless compassion for her people and presenting the reason for her emotional plea, she told the king, "For how can I endure to see the evil that shall come unto my people? Or how can I endure to see the destruction of my kindred?" The king's response showed Esther that his approval remained towards her. He addressed both Esther and Mordecai and reminded them, "Behold, I have given Esther the house of Haman, and him they have hanged upon the gallows because he laid his hand upon the Jews." The king reviewed his gestures of goodwill toward them in executing Haman for his plot to kill their people, the Jews, and then giving Esther the vast and rich estate of Haman. King Ahasuerus also reminded Esther that it was impossible to cancel or revoke the first edict, and no succeeding edict could repeal a preceding one. In democratic nations today, such as our own, legislatures can reverse decisions and revoke laws, but this wasn't the case in the ancient Persian Empire. As the king said in verse 8, "The writing which is written in the king's name and sealed with the king's ring may no man reverse." Thus, Esther's request that a decree be written to revoke or reverse Haman's decree was not possible for the king to do. But the king, in his desire to help Esther, Mordecai, and the Jews, then suggested that they write a counter decree, a new decree for the Jews, as it liketh you. The king told them that with Mordecai being the chief officer and having the king's signet ring, they had the authority to write any decree they pleased for the Jews or for the Jews' benefit, which would help the Jews and neutralize Haman's decree. So an offsetting, counteracting decree to enable the Jews to survive could be written, and this decree would be just as irreversible and unchangeable as Haman's decree. The king gave Esther and Mordecai here really a royal carte blanche, showing his trust in them. Ahasuerus told Esther and Mordecai to word it any way it seemed best to them, write it in the king's name, and seal it with the king's ring.
We'll be returning to the program in just a minute, but first we'd like to take this time to thank you, our partners, for making these programs possible. If you would like to access our library of helpful Bible study tools, go to BereanBibleSociety.org.
Exploring the Unsearchable Riches of Christ is a 190-page hardcover book written by Pastor Paul M. Sadler. The purpose of this book is to establish the reader in God's message for the church, the body of Christ, during this present age of grace. This volume explores the unsearchable riches of Christ, which were originally dispensed to the Apostle Paul, and considers the proper interpretation of God's Word in light of the dispensations of God. To order your copy, contact Berean Bible Society for pricing and availability at 262-255-4750 or visit our website at BereanBibleSociety.org.
To receive our free, full-color 32-page monthly magazine, The Berean Searchlight, call 262-255-4750 or subscribe online at www.BereanBibleSociety.org. Thank you again for your generous gifts.
Esther chapter 8, verses 9 to 14 read, "Then were the king's scribes called at that time in the third month, that is, the month Sivan, on the 23rd day thereof, and it was written according to all that Mordecai commanded unto the Jews, and to the lieutenants, and the deputies and rulers of the provinces which are from India unto Ethiopia, and 127 provinces, unto every province according to the writing thereof, and unto every people after their language, and to the Jews according to their writing, and according to their language. And he wrote in the king Ahasuerus' name, and sealed it with the king's ring, and sent letters by posts on horseback, and riders on mules, camels, and young dromedaries. Wherein the king granted the Jews, which were in every city, to gather themselves together, and to stand for their life, to destroy, to slay, and to cause to perish all the power of the people and province that would assault them, both little ones and women, and to take the spoil of them for a prey. Upon one day in all the provinces of King Ahasuerus, namely upon the 13th day of the 12th month, which is the month Adar, the copy of the writing for a commandment to be given in every province was published unto all people, and that the Jews should be ready against that day to avenge themselves on their enemies. So the posts that rode upon mules and camels went out, being hastened and pressed on by the king's commandment, and the decree was given at Shushan the palace." Mordecai now acts swiftly. Royal scribes were called to write a decree that Mordecai would dictate to them to help the Jews. Verse 9 states that this took place in the third month, that is the month Sivan, on the 23rd day thereof, or the 23rd day of the third month Sivan, which roughly corresponds to our May and June. The decree was written by the scribes according to all that Mordecai commanded, and was addressed unto the Jews and the government officials of every province of Persia, all 127 of them, from India to Ethiopia. It was also translated into all the various languages of the peoples within the empire. And verse 9 specifically adds that it was translated into Hebrew for the Jews. As directed by King Ahasuerus, Mordecai wrote the decree in the king's name and sealed it with his signet ring. Then the decree was sent out by the fastest means of transportation at that time to give the Jews plenty of time to prepare to defend themselves. Verse 10 states that it was sent by posts on horseback and riders on mules, camels, and young dromedaries, which means they were carried by couriers on horseback, riding on mules, camels, and royal relay horses. With great speed, the new decree was carried to the uttermost parts of the empire. Haman's decree had a 2-month head start. Thus, it was urgent that word of the counteracting decree be spread through the empire as quickly as possible. The contents of the decree were as follows: wherein the king granted the Jews, which were in every city, to gather themselves together and to stand for their life. It granted the Jews the right to organize and assemble, to fight for their lives and to defend themselves, commanding and allowing all the Jews of a province to collect and gather themselves together, made them a formidable force. Scattered separately and individually in various towns and villages, they would have been more easily overpowered, but the decree called for them to band together for their protection. Haman's decree had called for those in the kingdom to destroy, to kill, and to cause to perish all Jews, both young and old, little children and women, and to take the spoil of them for a prey. Mordecai's counter decree called for the Jews to destroy, to slay, and to cause to perish all the power of the people and province that would assault them, both little ones and women, and to take the spoil of them for a prey. Thus the Jews were permitted to fight back and destroy and slay any person or armed force of a province who might attack them and their women and children, and they could then plunder the property of their enemies. The Jews were authorized to do this on the day appointed for their slaughter, upon the 13th day of the 12th month, which is the month Adar. On that day, both decrees would dramatically clash. Mordecai's decree was written by the same scribes sent to the same rulers in the 127 provinces in the same languages, sealed with the same signet ring from the king and sent by the same couriers. But the content of this new decree counteracted Haman's. The new edict gave royal permission to the Jews to defend themselves, and it neutralized the enemy's former advantage. It was made known to all Persia, so that all the people would be on notice that the Jews would be ready to fight back on the 13th of Adar, and thus hopefully discourage the people from taking action against them, because they would risk their lives in doing so. The mounted couriers raced out to deliver the decree to all parts of the kingdom of Persia, being hastened on by the king's commandment, because the more time the Jews had to prepare to defend themselves, the better would be their chances. Esther 8:15 to 17 says, "And Mordecai went out from the presence of the king in royal apparel of blue and white, and with a great crown of gold, and with a garment of fine linen and purple. And the city of Shushan rejoiced and was glad. The Jews had light and gladness and joy and honor, and in every province and in every city, whithersoever the king's commandment and his decree came, the Jews had joy and gladness, a feast and a good day. And many of the people of the land became Jews, for the fear of the Jews fell upon them." Verse 14 ends with stating that the decree was given or issued at Shushan the palace. After the decree had been issued and proclaimed in the city, Mordecai went out from the presence of the king. With his new position as second in command over all Persia, Mordecai came out of the palace wearing clothes that reflected his authority, befitting his important and high position in the Persian government. He came walking out of the palace wearing a blue and white robe, which were the Persian royal colors. He had a great crown of gold on his head, which was either a large golden band or a large turban that was ornamented with gold. Mordecai also was attired with a garment of fine linen and purple, which was the tunic or the inner robe. When Haman's decree of death for the Jews was issued, Mordecai put on sackcloth and ashes. But now, by the working of God, after his promotion and counteracting decree, he was wearing royal apparel and a golden crown. When Haman's decree went out, the city Shushan was perplexed and thrown into confusion. But when Mordecai's decree went out, verse 15 tells us that the city of Shushan rejoiced and was glad. And when the people of Shushan saw Mordecai, they rejoiced and were glad for him and his new role and his decree that he had issued. With Mordecai and Haman, we see the truth of Proverbs 29:2. When the righteous are in authority, the people rejoice, but when the wicked beareth rule, the people mourn. The residents of Shushan were glad, and the Jews were especially glad, as verse 16 tells us. When Haman's decree went out, understandably, there was great mourning among the Jews, and fasting, and weeping, and wailing. But because of Mordecai's decree, the Jews had light, and gladness, and joy, and honor. Because of this new decree, the Jews were confident of victory and able to rejoice ahead of time. Their dread of impending doom was lifted. The dark cloud that hung over them was dispelled, and the Jews had light and lightness. Their mourning and weeping was turned into gladness and joy. Haman's decree dishonored all Jews, but now Mordecai's decree brought them honor. Not only were the Jews of Shushan rejoicing, but when the decree was delivered and proclaimed throughout the empire, in every province and in every city, verse 17 tells us, the Jews had joy and gladness, a feast and a good day. Everywhere the decree went, joy followed it. Throughout the empire, and interestingly, verse 17 adds, and many of the people of the land became Jews, for the fear of the Jews fell upon them. The Jews gained great respect and were feared throughout Persia. This fear was due to the dramatic change that had taken place from the decree that ordered the Jews' annihilation to the rise to power of Jews in the Persian government, and now a new decree for the benefit and protection of the Jews, and God's hand in it all being obvious. The Gentiles could see that God was with the Jews and that he was working and caring for them in a remarkable way. And not wanting to be numbered among their enemies, many Gentiles instead joined themselves to the Jews and became proselytes to the Jews' religion. And this was God's purpose from the start for the nation of Israel, for her to be a blessing and a light to the nations, to lead them to the living God. And God's purpose for our lives individually is also to be a light to lead others to Him.
Thank you again for tuning in to Transformed by Grace. We appreciate your prayer support and the financial gifts. The purpose and mission of the Berean Bible Society is to help you understand the whole counsel of the Word of God. For more information, visit our website at www.BereanBibleSociety.org or give us a call at 262-255-4750. Or if you prefer, write us at the Berean Bible Society. Now until next time, may you be transformed by God's grace.